that back class will bite you if you don't
watch out. Yeah. But the first one that Howard mentioned is Super. Of course, it was stunk last year. It really got good this year. He's either got a new trainer that knows what to do, or they found out in toll card. This horse will make you money because people won't believe it. They won't believe he's better. And you get overlay after overlay most of the time. All right, let's go on to the next page because I don't want to belabor all this and take up this whole time. Now, this time-date thing also is taken with a grain of salt. It is a guideline. If you try to put a rigid time date on horses, you're going to burn yourself alive because like they'll eat you up. You just have to go with what the cycle, what the rhythm tells you that the horse does. If he can win off a layoff, he'll win off a layoff. And he'll not only do it once, he'll do it twice, he'll do it, or he runs good races. Some horses have to have it that way. They're not sound enough to keep you going race after race. So, for the low class horses, the optimal is to have a decent race within 30, 35 days. The higher the class, the more leeway on the date. Allowance horses, high claimers can get 60-day races and run right back to them real easy. Stake horses find their best win and rate them off of that in that grade or close to it. If they're running grade one stakes, you need grade one stake horses. And their race should be a grade one race to rate. Preferably a win if you can get it. That'll tell you how good that horse is. Because you don't have to worry about the condition of these guys. They're all in shape because they're running for big money. You don't put them out there unless they're in shape. What you're looking for there is who can beat who. The rest of that is just a little bit of things for some observations on cycles and why to go back in the green and search for long shots with this stuff, because it does work. Now, I want to give one more thing for them, and then I'm going to be done here. I'll turn it over to the panel to discuss whatever else we need. And that is how to handle the other races outside of claimers, okay? Non-winners of one and non-winners of two are written for one type of horse only, the good maiden. That's the horse. The young maiden really is outstanding, and he's going to move up into that next level and win that and move up to that next level. And you can spot them, and you can just spot them right up the line until they hit their saturation point. Jim Quinn has a new book coming out, and he has an old one called the Handicapper's Condition Book, but it was very complicated. I haven't seen the new one, but from what I hear, I understand he clarifies a lot of stuff because he's actually gotten better with it. And I would suggest that everybody get a hold and look at that book, because that explains the class levels and allowance races. Not to make systems out of it, but you can apply the same thing. Who's got the edge in an allowance race?
Page 36 in your manual. That very book.
And I've been a speed handicapper all my life, but you know, I have a tendency, since I'm a little over 60, to go back and wake the dead all the time. Howard gets a little mad at me, but if you stop and figure out, the guy that really started all this as far as what we're concerned with is Ray Talbert. He's mentioned Ray Talbert. He was a pace handicapper who qualified everything, I mean everything, by class. And if you read any of this stuff, he talks back class, sharp horses in class, horses moving up grade. Everything is class to go along the pace lines. So we're not going to argue which is the best. We're going to take the best out of both. We have the best pace method in the world. And if you just put a lot of sense and use this stuff, you're in business. So who's got the edges in the allowance races? Horses moving down out of handicaps. Horses moving down out of the open races into restricted. You read the conditions. You figure it out. Jim Quinn will tell you how. It's a marvelous tool. It's not a system. But if you hook the pace handicapper with the class handicapper, you've got a great big broad handicap here that you've got to be good. Stake horses win stake races. Once in a blue moon, a grade 3 will be a grade 2, or a grade 2 will be a grade 1. They stay in grade. They sort themselves out. So that's state races are simple. You either do or you don't. And if they qualify, then the better horse. Ferdinand, he qualified. He was a tremendous closer in the Kentucky Derby. He got a great break because he set a speed duel up for him. But if, you know, the horses that qualified, they did all the running. Preakness the same thing, the Belmont. Any state race. Just look at the state winners. The grade one horses and the grade one stakes. Once in a while, one, and the one that's going to do it, come up is the young horse that's improving like man, you know. So that's a little bit of thing. So that's about all I've got to say on this. Anybody got any questions before?
Why would I do all this, make these checks, zeros, in to classify, you know, get a line on the class of the horse? Why would I do that instead of using the computer program, class adjustment, money earning per start? Why would I do that instead of using the computer?
You use them both.
Class adjustment.
Earnings per start are fine. To try to put numerical figures on class adjustments is suicide. You can't combine them. But you can get mindsets like I'm telling you. Here's a horse, all pluses. He's moving down. I can expect him to run better than what he looks. Why? He's meeting easier horses. Checks. These horses have been running against the same horses they're running today. Their form will show me. Their pace lines will show me whether they belong in a race on the matchups, right? Zeros. The trainer's asking this horse to do something that he's never done before, that he can't do. Probably. Sometimes he can. They're great place horses. Horses with all zeros that have a nice pace line. They very seldom win. They get caught in stretch. But they place a lot. It makes a great model horse. That's why you do it. Okay?
In the development of the methodology, in the old days, going back to the Blue Manual, there used to be, we would make a numerical number. A numerical number, listen to me. We would have an actual calculation for the class. Yeah, I sit next to between an Oklahoman and a Southern Californian, and all of a sudden syntax goes out the window. We would make a figure combining earnings per start, average purse value, and I believe win percentage.
Yes.
Or win the money percentage.
That's the program I'm working with.
Right.
That's all I know.
Okay, so let me tell you where we've gone since then.
Yeah.
Okay, and that is, and we would just blindly put those numbers on to the pace numbers.
Right.
It's an approach which will probably get you 63% without much problem. What we found, though, was that most of the people who were using the methodology really well were considering class as a separate issue. We're classifying the horses before they ever got to the question of pace. The reason is, if you're considering a horse who doesn't belong in the race from a class point of view, he should not, his pace number should not be looked at because he will not run with this crowd. On the other hand, if you have a horse that really is a superior class animal, he will run well despite his class numbers. And the attempt to make that numerically, it's a good attempt, but most of the people who use the methodology and who win with it feel that, at least let me speak for myself, I feel that considering the two issues separately is the way to go. Considering almost everyone will run an APV first on every horse, just to look at it, see who's in the race, if there's a stick out, if someone belongs, rather than trying to quantify that and putting a number on that. So I don't think anyone here at the table uses those class numbers in with the pace, melding them in. That was something which was Howard's initial attempt to deal with it in a mechanical way.
So when a program asks for a class adjustment, you feel we shouldn't put anything in
it? Again, running up here to reiterate what Michael has said, the first person who ameliorated or altered that was Bob Purdy here. He said, I would rather take those figures that you generate from your phase three program, those class adjustment figures, but write them over to the side and see afterwards, if I put those on the factor W, what it would do to the horse. Now, if you only want 63%, and remember, your initial program is designed to get you 63%, which a lot of people think is plenty high, you will find you'll get 63% for following that procedure. You will then say to yourself, hey, I want to do more. That is when the insights that you will derive from what Dick has been talking about and these others will enhance your win percentage beyond 63. But you're absolutely right to do it that way initially. Don't feel that this supersedes that class adjustment factor. And Purdy will tell you that he found he did much better by analyzing that and then applying it. But if you lose sight of what the horse did by putting those adjustments on and say, hey, I did that, not the horse, then you're never going to get much beyond 63.
What kind of computer do you use?
Commodore.
Okay, well, I don't have that program.
Puts it on early or late, depending on
the feedback. Recently, I guess 6 months ago or so, this question of class came up in one of Howard's weekend seminars we had at Beaumont. So I rewrote the original Phase 3 horse program for the handheld, the 1350. And if you ask for the class adjustment in that particular program, it gives you two factor W's, one with and one without the class adjustment. And then you can rank them on your Brohammer model or however you're tracking it to see if it does produce. And it's optional in the front of the program. I don't know whether it can be done with a Commodore or not.
Yeah, Commodore gives you both figures, raw and adjusted on your W.
You see, one of the things that I'm trying to, well, the reason I pounded on this a little bit is don't get too bound up in those figures and let them leech around by the nose.
Dick, let me say something.
Yeah.
Remember now, these are not rules that Dick's giving you.
No.
These are guidelines and these are tools. You've got to remember, we said that you have a number of tools that you can work with. I personally don't use it. The main reason is that I tell people to use it. I have found that beginners in using this tool that Dick has provided has definitely helped people realize some of the things that they didn't realize, and has helped them be able to find pace lines. This is an excellent tool to study. It doesn't, as Howard said, supersede anything that you have, and if you don't want to use it, don't use it. Because it isn't a rule that you have to go by. But it's something that will definitely help, and especially beginners, to be able to recognize contenders and pace line selection.
Yeah. It's a decision that you folks ought to make, and that is find out whether or not it produces winners at your track. If it does, use it. If it doesn't, why go that extra effort? You have to decide that on your own.
One, I can talk. Dick's materials are very, very valuable. I have found, I just made a transition from using phase three numbers solely to using ultra numbers. And sometimes in races, I would go over dozens of times to get it to see where, how it would be predicted, which pace lines would be predicted. I went over some of those old races that I had to do many times applying Dick's guidelines, and very often it would point to a reason to go back on a horse. See, we're getting into pace lines just a little bit, but if I may be permitted to overlap just a bit. Classifying a horse will give you an idea of when a horse can run better than he appears to in his recent races. So it's a vital thing. It's one that will not only save you time and save you the time of entering and considering horses that don't belong, it will also enable you to get price by digging deeply under the surface before you consider pace.
You get tremendous insight into the race and race structure, class and class structure, by following these guidelines. Now, in looking at this particular race, you really don't need it, because all of these horses are about $3,000 horses. If I had one of the horses and could sell it for $5,000, I'd be tickled to death to sell it for $5,000. But if you look a little further, you can see that all of these horses are just about $3,000 to $5,000 horses is all they are. You know, sometimes we get hung up on class and forget so many things that are just right in front of our eyes.
We had a carpenter come to the house, and he had a great big chest. He was fixing something. And he took a couple of tools out and he fixed it. And I said, gee whiz, what's all these things? I said, well, I've got a grommet here and a gumus and a side of the left-handed monkey wrench. He only used about three tools in that kit to do the job that I hired him.
But at some time in his life, he may have taken and used that grommet, that left-handed monkey wrench, and all those other things. These are tools. Some people cannot get past, yeah, but the class, I always classify horses, how come you guys don't do that? What we're doing is supplying a tool to bridge the gap for those who need this particular weapon that Richard has provided. And a lot of people, I mean a lot of people, have found that what Richard has provided here allows them to utilize what they already know with the new language of the methodology without conflict, and that's why Richard provides them. So a little trick here, Richard, we did not invent this, my dear friend William Hall did, and it's marvelous. Look at on page 64, you'll see it in every claiming race. Stick around, Richard, what do you want to do? Especially, this goes along with some of the things he was saying. Now, Huey, this is not our invention. This we graciously steal this from my dear mentor, Huey Ball. We all know that in the allowance race, it says non-winners of one or non-winners of two, and we know how to classify allowance races. So we're looking for the horse that barely meets, almost exceeds the conditions, but barely squeezes in. He's replaced three times, and he's won at some other level. Huey says, in a claiming race, go to the first date, you see. Draw a line at the first date. On this race, it says, first 12,000 fillies and mares, etc., etc. Non-winners of two races since June. Forget that allowed and all the things, stuff that comes after. Draw a line after June 15th.
64.
June 5th. 64. 64. No, 69. Pardon me, that's why we're getting. Pardon me. Is there an optometrist in the house? We have a podiatrist. Says you. Okay, he says draw a line with the first date you see. Now, what I would do there, what Daryl Martin and I did for years after we read that, we just drew a line there, and we found it by making sure we took a pace line no farther back than one race beyond that date. You can go back one race beyond that date. Find the pace line in there that's most represented. Don't go beyond that ever. We called out, and this is part of Richard's exercise in reality.
Fits like a glove.
You're now creating the conditions that everybody is familiar with, allowance conditions, and you're manufacturing those conditions for a claim. Never mind that it says allow three loves, LBs. All right, just hit the date and go, you can go one race beyond that and confine your pace line selection within that group. Now you've narrowed it. Yes, sir.
Can you say that again?
Okay, on page, are you at 69? Okay, it reads, the conditions of this claiming race reads, fillies and mares 4 years old and upward weight 122 pounds, no races since June 15th. Draw a line behind June 15th. Now go back to May 23rd, which is as far back as you can go, one race beyond June 15th. June 4th in this case. June 4th. You've got to use one of those two races. You've got to use that last race or the two races back. That's it. Those are the conditions under which the trainer entered the horse. Those are the deadlines that he has to use. He says, if my horse done anything in that period of time, usually you have three or four races that you can choose from. In this case, there are only two. It is not a rule again, but it is one heck of a guideline. One heck of a guideline for those. Remember, these are not designed. Anything we're talking about are not designed for the Bradshaws who go and pick the right pace line without even looking at this stuff. Bradshaw doesn't even know what a date is. Date, where do you see that? But if you have trouble deciding where shall I go to pick this pace line, these are guidelines. And Richard's guidelines have helped a lot of people. They seem old-fashioned, seat-of-the-pants handicapping, but they are very, very effective until what he's doing, the circles and X's become unnecessary to you. Your mind is making circles and reds and greens and X's and O's and what have you. These are guidelines for those who are having difficulty in this all-important task of picking a baseline. And this is just another adjunct to what Richard's talking about, supplied by the man I think who's contributed more than anyone to our business, Huey Maugham. Yes, sir. If you wish him to, Dick will spend hours on anything.
What do you need? Yeah, that's very simple. All I did here, and Howard really did most of the mathematics, I gave certain parameters for a horse that's in condition. Moves, bid and hung, early speed, closer to the lead, up closer to stretch. These are all the old hat handicappers based on beaten limbs to show you that a horse is coming into form or is in form. Howard took it and put the parameters in here. If you use pace of the horse, pace of the race, you don't have to guess. It's there. And it includes the one ingredient that you need, velocity. And it's very simple. They're all there. And that readout there, which you can get that program, if you follow, like he was talking about the move in the second quarter last night, the hidden fraction where the horse is getting, that's in there. And it tells you the feet per second parameters that you should have to really be right on the money. It looks complicated, but it's as simple as all get out. You just look at it and not don't make anything hard out of it. It's how to interpret that pace of the race, pace of the horse program, which is tremendously important. That's what all this is leading up to, is how to use the pace methodologies that we have, whether it's alter scan, matchups, contender scan, phase three. All this is just leading up to it, to get the shaft out of the way so you got nothing but the wheat left to work with when you make your matchups, because that saves you so much time. Look, if you've got a check horse that has lousy condition in the last 35 days and you're dealing with a $5,000 horse and he's got nothing back of it, what are you going to look at him? More than 2 seconds. Wham! Throw him out. Now you don't have to bother with that horse. Your 10 horse field is now 9. If you've got a couple of zero horses that are just mediocre, their pace lines are way below, you can see by the velocities that they're not going to get, even before you put them in, you know. If you got horses in there running 45 quarters and these guys got halves and their final times are, they're coming home in 26, 27, and they're going to try to beat better grade horses in 25s and 24s, they haven't got a prayer. They'll win one out of a million races. Throw them out. Now you got two of those out, now you're down to a 7-horse field. You haven't even looked at the computer yet. You see what I mean? That's what all this is about. That's the basis of it. It's not to replace it. It's not to argue with it. You don't care which method works, class or pace. The thing you want to do is use them both. Then you got it. And the guys are arguing back in the back here, you can laugh all the way to the bank. I will give you one more thing, and then I'm going to get off of here, because I don't know how I've been up here an hour and a half, my hop lines in this.
All right,
gosh. The thing about, see, you said I was long-winded.
It was right.
Yeah. The one little tip-off that you can use with a horse that has a layoff and you're suspecting that he might be better when you're looking for a pace line to use, use his first good race before the layoff. Because that represented what the horse was doing before the guy had to stop with him. Chances are if he's going to improve, he won't improve beyond that. You follow what I'm talking about? And say the horse has been off since September till November, and he's got a good race on August the 29th, but he's got a better race in July. Don't take the July race. Take the August race. Because that represents probably what the horse's condition will approach closest to. Follow me? That really works. Yes, sir?
What are the positive and negative factors? How do you find those?
Well, they're just the moves. See, a horse that... Suppose they start out and a horse goes 60 drops off to 48, but he still had the lead. That's negative. He couldn't hold his pace. You see what I mean? But suppose the horse started out 60, went 61, and dropped off. That's positive, man. He got burned up. If he meets an easier pace next time out, you follow what I'm talking about? See, it's matchups. Matchups. How it will affect the horse. These are decisions that you have to make every day. The wonderful thing about it, most of the programs will make the final decisions more correct than you will. So when you get it down to three or four horses, if you got the right contenders in there, trust your program. It'll be right more times than you do. Don't re-handicap the program. I'm going to... Is there any other questions or anything?
Can you just briefly describe how you utilize that graph on page 16?
Is that the form diagram?
Yeah, that's the same thing as this here, pace of the race, pace of the horse.
That's it.
You just graph it out into a visual.
Yeah. It's a copy graph. You just mark it in there.
What this is a combination of all the factors. Your Commodore and Timex programs print that out for you. Face graph. Well, you can visualize it yourself. It merely is a linear graph. Who's got the highest number? Jimmy's gone graph mad in all the programs now. A lot of people in Oklahoma, they can't read the numbers, but when they see that long line, they know how to read graph. And it really works. So make a graph if you have to. That's why I made the copy graph. I'm so stupid. I'm sitting at the racetrack and the horse has got a high number and my eyes go out of focus. I'm so excited about winning and I'm juxtaposing 56s and 58s and betting on the 56 instead of the 58. So I started drawing lines for myself. And when the more education you got, the stupider you are when it comes to reality. So if I drew a line and I say, well, the long line is going to be the winner. Now, I finally got that through my head, and so I bet on the long line. And all that does is take your numbers and translate it into a line so you'll automatically see. That's why we use the copy gap. 1, 2, 3 is better than 4, 5, 6. Simple stuff like that will really make you money. What he's talking about in a move is The fellow that you're betting against the track sees six. He sees the horses on the lead. He's got number one, and he sees a number one at the second call. He said, "Boy, there's the early speed." How many of you think that early speed is big in the first call and the second call? Well, see, you're beyond that fellow. If he's got a 60 and he's third, he's a lot better than a horse who's 57 was first. Velocity, not position. So what he's talking about in answer to your question is, he's talking about a horse that starts off 58 against a 60, and then against a 58, he goes up to 59. He made a move, a positive move there. He may not have won the race, but he showed that he was alive and well, and he moved on the pace. Sometimes that doesn't happen to here. He's horrible here and here, and he only happens here. You got to say, hey, did he make a move, or was everybody else just getting tired? The most important move you'll see is the one in the second fraction, which we call turn time, because virtually it's always around a turn. The biggest sign of a horse coming alive is when he flashes early speed, not being on the lead, but early velocity, and then does not die too much here. If he holds that for two calls, you can now say he did flash early speed and not be too concerned about his dropping off. Go back to a race where he did well. Another thing Richard was saying in that thing is, look at the horse's last race before his good race. Suppose in the last race you're looking at it, it's pretty awful. Now go back to the race just before his last good race and see how close it approximated this last race. That'll tell you what he's going to do tomorrow more than anything else you can see. What did he do before his last good race? Was it bad like this one? Did he show a move here or a move there as he did in the last race? If he didn't, if the last race represents a different point in his form cycle, then you could say, I'll stick with the last race. He's not improving.
Well, once you do this, you will be absolutely amazed how predictive you can get based on what they did before. You know, you say, hey, this guy, look,
He showed his wake up run. Then he won. Maybe he'll do it today. Bam.
Is this concept you're just talking about good for all classes of horses, or just plain in the middle, or stakes horses too?
The form cycle is equally applicable to every horse there is. With a grade one stakes horse is the only time when you can say that you can use a best race. You have to say that, or even average, to get some concept, because a grade one stakes horse will have a lot longer layoff, sometimes only race four or five times a year. They are conditioned by their very nature of their breeding and class. They are conditioned because they're big money horses. They're strategy races, and you can bet that they're not going to pay those entry fees to get them in unless they're ready.
Now, I want to emphasize this last thing, and then I'm going to drop this and move on either to baselines or APV. APV is next to our, but you want whoever's going to do that. Look, think of it this way. When you're looking at a race and you see a bunch of pluses on a horse, you got to be wary of this horse. It's a red flag, you know. Is this guy going to fool me? Is he going to get better? And it tells you one thing: look deeper. Okay? Now, you look at a horse with a real hot pace line and you get nothing but zeros. The red flag comes up again because you say, boy, now he did that against cheap horses. Is somebody going to get out? He likes to run a 45 with a 22. Is somebody going to get out in 21 and 2 and kill him? You see, upset his rhythm. So you look there and you say, yeah, there's a guy in there. Uh-oh, he's in trouble. Even though his pace line is better than anybody else's, somebody's going to burn him up. You see what I mean? So there's the red flag, you follow. And then when you see the checks, everything's hunky-dory. He's been running against this same bunch, so you can believe what you're looking at. And that's all it amounts to, nothing more. Don't make anything more of it. Don't make an ironclad class system out of it, because it'll, just like anything else, once you get too narrow in one thing, it'll bury you. It'll turn on you. Okay, thank you.
Now listen to what Richard says there. Use it as a tool if you need it as a tool. Jimmy and I have always tried to stress this. Don't buy a contender scan, for instance, if you're already doing five contenders. Why buy a program that does it for you if you're already doing it? Don't spend money on programs that you could better spend as your bank at the track. Only get those programs which you need. Only take those tools which you need. What Richard showed you in here is a lot of us do this intuitively. I'm sure Richard took him years to write it because he's been doing it so long, he just doesn't everybody. So actually putting it into print is merely as a tool. It's one tool in your arsenal. The two that I like the best for classifying horses, which pretty soon after you've done it for a while, will come automatically, and you'll make no more of it than it's worth. And they are APV and a measurement of form cycle. Now, you all are very studious people who have read everybody, and you know that Dr. Quirin has said in his recent book that APV is not very significant. You know that people say, yeah, but APV in the state bred is inflated, and that APV does not pick the winner more than it should, etc., etc. This is why we do not pick winners with APV. APV should be measured in parameters. What you do about state bred is pretty much what Michael said and what Robert said. Not 20% off. If they're from New York, Nebraska, or any other state bred except Florida and Kentucky. Florida and Kentucky state bred horses are worth more than open company. New York is probably worth the least. They grow everything marvelously in New York except horses, apparently. That they inflate the, and Nebraska, that's pretty awful. That's even worse. And Louisiana. Those are the three that you got to watch out the most. So, as with everything else, deal in reality. If state bred purses are 20% too high when going into open company, discount them by a good 20%. But here's what it does for you. Bob Cochran can wax eloquent on this. I'm just moderating this. APV has parameters. in every one of the races in this manual, when a horse did not win with one of the top four APVs, there is a very good reason for it. One of them is a foreign horse, which Mike only multiplied by double. He should multiply it by four. APVs from English races are one-fourth of ours. Irish, one-fifth. French, a half. Latin America, 15%. You multiply. Those foreign ones do not count on your APV because of the diminished purses over there. When a horse is coming from a minor track where the purses are very low, as we have one called Chinook Passin here. What page is Chinook Pass on? We merely found out, we won one race at the major track. We found out the purse of that race was precisely today's purse. So the fact that he had a 48% at Long Acres was immaterial, as Long Acres purses are considerably low. You have to use some judgment. You can't just go and say, he's got 48% of the purse, I'll throw him out. Where did he earn only 48% of the purse? We have one other example. We have three that didn't make it in the entire book. One of them was an allowance horse from Garden State who came to Belmont and won.
Aqua Hero.
Each one of those who defied the parameters of APV had a very good explanation for it. But almost all the others, virtually every other race, you'll find out that the horse who won the race was in the top four APV or was equal to or better than today's purse. So you don't use APV to select your horses, you use it to eliminate the horses you will not consider. Bob Cochran found, for instance, at Sportsman, a lower class track, 5/8 oval, he had to go to the top five APV horses to avoid a loss in what, 20, that was a 17 race cycle. Whereas at Hawthorne, he only had to go to the top four to avoid a loss in 21 races. They are parameters. Where does a horse have to be? And you are the only one who can decide that. What you do when you're making your Brohammer regression model is to say, where did the winners come from in relationship to their ranking in APV? Sometimes the ranking is not sufficient because you have to have the percentile figures. We found out at Prince's Art Track that they won't win 0.72% of today's purse. We can throw out anything under 70. You allow a little bit. For place, we found an entirely different APV structure. It was something like 48%. Whatever those parameters are at your track, you can just about depend on them. Keep an accurate running line of what the parameters are. How low can they go and still win? How high are they, and they almost always place? It's just another way of looking at what Richard's talking about, and probably the easiest qualifying thing there is. Because just do an APV on every horse in the race, you'll never be surprised when a horse jumps up and bites you and is the other horse in your exact, especially for place. Yes, sir?
One problem that I have with a particular program that you know, is this idea of word. If you come up with an APV, and I just select that process, put it in, you find the horse that's only 20% of the purse. All right, well, I don't want to waste the time, you know, like go to baseline on it. You know, like, this horse has got no shot. Well, the fact is, the program is, you know, like, it's going to force you into the running line. Okay? That's the next step.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's separate.
The next step, you're going to divide by zero. You know, like, you don't want to do anything. You know, like, this is going to get plus to the bar.
Which IBM program do you have?
Phase 3?
Yeah, I've heard about that.
That's why I really wanted to talk about.
Well, you got the right guy there.
But, you know, like, it seems to me it should be a relatively simple modification. You know, like, all I have to say, you know, like, all right, you want to abort this or, you know, like, this is
I've written several of those things, and that's... You're the second guy that's come up with that bug in the program, and I wasn't aware of it. We'll take care of it. The other programs that I've written for the IBM, it is an optional. And when you say you want to do APV, you say yes. This is how you can do it, and I think you can do the same thing on the handhelds. You say, do APV, you go into the APV routine. You push the horse through and it gives you the percentage. And it says data okay, yes or no. Just say no and do the next horse. You just keep saying no every time.
But the problem is no, it'll hook you back. You know, like it'll bring in, you know, like for instance, all right, listen to the first, you know, like it asks you again for the first time.
Right.
So,
yeah, right.
You're just going to loop.
You're saying do the next horse then.
Yeah.
Pardon?
And do all yours on APV first.
Do all the horses on APV.
Well, he'll fix the IBM program. The handhelds, the cheapies, you have to have it where it will work. We just say no and it goes on. But that'll be taken care of. That's a mechanical
make problem. Make sure we get your name and address and all that kind of stuff, and we'll get you the corrected version of the IBM.
And we'll send you a bottle of Chanel No. 5, Tim. Promise anything but give her Chanel.
Yeah, I have. All my programs are in DBIS. Because I keep a huge data.
Get together on these individual things, get together private because of the
talk to me during a break.
Poor Joe's trying to sell these tapes, he's going to have long gaps in them with things that people won't understand. But do get the problem solved. We're not sloughing the problem off, but that is a mechanical problem. Mechanical problems with your computers, talk to anybody, Schmidt and Purdy or and Bradshaw are cheap programmers.
This is the end of the tape.